Hello, everyone. This is Jay Austin, the Bowtie King of Atlanta, back with a podcast today. I think it's very interesting. I went on vacation, and today's podcast is going to be about the Equal Justice Initiative Museum in Montgomery, Alabama. Got a chance to go down there on my vacation, and it's actually two in one. There is a Legacy Museum, which I'll talk about, and then there's a National Memorial for Peace and Justice that's probably about a half a mile away. It's walking distance from each other. Learned a lot of history, American history at that. I've lived in the South now, over 35 years, maybe even more. And the Southern culture is something that grows on you. It's got a lot to do. It's a beautiful place. It's throttled back. The cost of living is good. So there's a lot of good about the South. And one of the topics that always comes up if you're going to live down South, and again, you know, living here in Atlanta, there's a lot of transplants here in Atlanta. So a lot of times you kind of become immune to some of the things that are definitely Southern culture, but it's Atlanta's funny because you have a city feel, and then, you know, it's just kind of easy to not understand the different dynamics of the South outside of Atlanta. And that's not to say that, you know, it's bad or good, but in today's topic, we're going to talk about the founder, executive director of the Equal Justice Initiative. I'm going to give my first-person account. I got a chance to go down and actually take the tour. It's self-guided, by the way. I got a chance to take the tour and do a lot of reading. And I was just blown away at the sheer academic excellence and the meticulous work that went into this museum and this project. There was, and I don't want to steal all the thunder, but there was actually some holograms that really it takes the person to a time. It's almost an out-of-body experience that was a great use of technology that I'll be talking about. Some other things I noticed, and this happens sometimes. I don't know if it's the generation. I know people are full of sugar nowadays, and, you know, there's ADHD and all the other things, and really not here to debate that, but I feel I just want to talk a little bit about how take in a monument of this proportion, you know, what the etiquette is, how one should act, and maybe some of the things that, you know, I'm not going to say, you know, but I just want to talk a little bit about the etiquette and some things that I saw that maybe didn't sit with me right. And I'm an eternal optimist, so maybe some people didn't know how to act because nobody told them. So I definitely want to fix that. And, you know, just talk a little bit about it so you can get the most out of it. We'll also talk about one of the confusing things. I know nowadays everybody, you know, you're going to look on your iPhone or the computer to try to find out, like, where parking is, where something is located. It could be a little confusing on the website about the museum and the memorial. So I'll kind of talk a little bit about that as well. And some of the things you can look for if you should decide to go down there and view it. It's a great trip to make. I know it's summertime, and you know, some people take a big vacation, and if you're like me, you take little vacations. You still have time for the summer vacation before the kids get back in school or whatever. And I think it would be nice in the fall as well, because there is it's an outdoor portion to it. But it's definitely worth seeing. I think just like the Jefferson Memorial, the Lincoln Memorial, Stone Mountain Carving, Mount Rushmore, Statue of Liberty. They're just some memorials, a testament to the great country that we live in, that I personally feel that all Americans should see. Just because, I mean, like it or not, this is our country. This is where we are. This is our story. And you know, now that I'm approaching the big 5-0, it's been a time as I get closer of introspective on a personal level, where I've been, where I'm going, what I've learned along the way. And, you know, this museum really, it really connected me with, like, what I'd like to say is missing pages of history books that we've all read and know, and the narrative that we could all repeat and say, everything from the Midnight Ride of Paul Revere to, you know, just some of the great speeches and different historical events that we are taught. But it was almost like just being able to take some of the stuff that was not there and put it into the book, that is the story of America, it really gave a unique perspective. And on this podcast, you know, I just want to, I'm going to talk about this topic and with the respect and dignity that it deserves. I fancy myself as somewhat of an adjunct sociologist, and I love history, all kind of history. I'm the guy that will go to Cyclorama and has gone to Cyclorama and sat there for 2 or 3 hours just to take in the detail of the just the scene. I mean, it's a battle that took place in Atlanta where I live. I've been to Kennesaw State Mountain. I'm a type of guy that'll go to Civil War reenactments and other things. I love Chinese culture. I just love history. So this museum really spoke to me. And I have noticed that a lot of times, especially in the South, you know, when we talk about the heritage, the Southern heritage and the Confederacy, other things, whenever we talk about it, that sinister undertone is something that I want to leave out of the conversation. I'm not going to run from it, but I just want to leave it out and just have the breath of fresh air that I felt at the Legacy Museum as I was taking in the history and the way it was laid out and done. I didn't feel any hate. I didn't feel any animosity. It just was. So I kind of want to take a page out of that book and begin this podcast. And when we get back, I'm going to just talk a little bit about the executive director, Mr. Brian Stevenson, who just, in my opinion, really deserves consideration for you know, a Medal of Honor, maybe even a Nobel Peace Prize, and I'll tell you why I feel that when we get back. So stay tuned. Welcome back, everybody. I just kind of want to jump in because we got a lot to cover today. I'm still on cloud nine from my visit to the Legacy Museum and the National Monument for Peace and Justice. And I just kind of want to start it off by thanking and letting our listeners know who the executive director of the Equal Justice Initiative is. Now, you know, when I got down there, you know, I don't think I knew what the Equal Justice Initiative was. I saw their logo everywhere, and it's a little confusing because you see the logo for the Legacy Museum, which is basically a old slave warehouse where slaves were taken prior to auction. And, you know, we'll get into that in a later segment. But that's where the actual museum is. And the National Memorial for Peace and Justice, which is, everybody says, you know, when it comes up, they're like, oh yeah, Oprah did a show. I mean, it's a great monument, which we'll get into later in the show as well. And I'll tell you some things that I learned that kind of floored me. Just goes to show you sometimes you got to just kind of slow down to take things in to really understand them. So that's something to stay tuned for as we go. But a little bit about Brian Stevens. Stevenson, you know, he, as I said before, he is the executive director for the Equal Justice Initiative, and that's located in Montgomery, Alabama. He is a lawyer by trade, and he's dedicated his life to helping the poor. And these are the poorest of the poor, to include people who are incarcerated, people on death row. He has been credited with winning some major legal challenges, things like eliminating excessive and unfair sentencing. He's actually taking the lead in getting some people exonerated off of death row. And he has also used his intellectual prowess to confront abuse from the mentally ill that find themselves in our judicial system. And a lot of times, you know, these people, they fall through the cracks. You know, there was a I guess it was a sticker or a shirt that really spoke to me when I was down there, and it said, "Each of us is bigger than the worst thing that we've ever done." And, you know, that's kind of like a profound statement, because I think everybody, if you're honest with yourself, and I know I am, I'm just going to use myself. I know everybody has done something in life that they're not proud of, they may have paid dearly for doing it. They may have learned and they moved on, and it's not that it's not like you're forgiven or saying anything is, you know, you did it, get over it type thing, which would be wrong. But that, whatever that is, it should not. And I say again, it should not define your whole existence, your whole walk in life. So, having said that, Mr. Stevens is also credited with his work done with anti-discrimination, anti-poverty legislation, and I guess I feel safe in saying his life's work, his life's project, is probably going to be this museum, because the undertaking alone deserves to be put in the Mount Rushmore category, the Lincoln Memorial, the Jefferson Memorial. I mean, it's really monumental. You can go to the EJI.org website if you want to just really drill down on some of his accolades. And there are a lot. But I would like to kind of wrap this segment up just by letting you know, and I think it's relevant to put this in here, because I want people to take away from this segment that this gentleman, this executive director, has used his intellectual capital. He has used his education to really earn the right to have this conversation about the peace, the National Memorial Peace and Justice Memorial is something that he has the right to speak on. I think he did an excellent job at really just focusing on the reverence due, and not the "he said you did this to me, I did this to you." But you know, as somebody myself, I've learned as I hadn't had a drink of alcohol now in over a decade, and you know, I still call myself an alcoholic, because I know the moment that I say that I'm not, or I'm done, or I beat it, that just leaves the door open. And sometimes for some of us, the first step to fixing any problem is you have to look at it and just admit that it's there. And I think that he did a great job at doing that, while respecting history, while letting people get a chance to tell their story with pride nor prejudice, which I just thought was remarkable in its own right. So, wanted to say, Mr. Stevenson, some of his credentials are, he has received 29 honorary doctoral degrees from such prestigious institutions of higher education as Yale, Harvard, Princeton, and Oxford University. He has a New York Times critically acclaimed bestseller titled Just Mercy, which was named Time Magazine as one of the 10 best books of nonfiction in 2014 and has been awarded several honors, including the Carnegie Medal by the American Library Association, the best nonfiction book of 2014. And just by looking at the work here at the museum and just doing a little background on him, I'd seen him on several news shows here and there. But this gentleman is truly an American hero. I feel like it's an honor to be living in the time of Mr. Stevenson, because, you know, as someone who loves history, you hear about people who built the Panama Canal, you hear about people who built the Jefferson Memorial, you hear about the people who built Washington, D.C., you hear about these things, but to actually be alive, to say I was alive to in the same time period as Mr. Stevenson is really an honor for me. So again, if you want to know more about Mr. Stevenson, please don't hesitate to visit EJI.org to find out more about him. So we'll be back after this segment, and then we're going to talk a little bit about the Legacy Museum located in downtown Montgomery. Stay tuned. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I am so excited. Just got off vacation a few, I guess last week, actually. Just got off vacation and got a chance to go down and see the Legacy Museum and the National Memorial for Peace and Justice in Montgomery, Alabama. And I must say, TV did not do it any justice at all. So really want to share that experience. Just to kind of be clear, because I didn't notice going in, like most Americans, you know, we just skim the headlines. There's actually two different things. And one, again, is the National Memorial for Peace and Justice. And that's the one that I think a lot of people reference that Oprah Winfrey actually talked about and had on the show. And I've noticed on social media in different places, they show the memorial and they walk through the memorial. And we'll get into that later in the show. But I started out when you get your tickets, you actually start out at the Legacy Museum. So I'm gonna start out there as well. The Legacy Museum, just to kind of preference and let you know, it's actually about the I guess the journey from blacks, or what I found out to be kidnapped Africans. It takes the story from enslavement to mass incarceration. That's where it starts. That's what that whole Legacy Museum is dedicated to. Now, I was really, when I went in, I didn't know what to expect at all. But just a few housekeeping things. You know, when you come in, there is a metal detector that you go through, take everything out your pockets type of deal. You cannot take any pictures. They ask you to cut your cell phones off. So there is an honor system there. I did see someone kind of violate that rule. And, you know, the staff had to say something to them, which, again, I think was very disrespectful because they were up front and asked that you didn't do that. It is a self-guided tour. So it's one of the things they start at, the tours start at a certain time. So when you actually go and purchase your ticket, and while I'm talking about your ticket, I'm just going to talk a little bit about the pricing. The ticket office is open from 9 to 6. They're closed on Tuesdays. Legacy Museum is open from 9 a.m. to 7:30. On Sundays, it's open from 9 a.m. to 6, and it's closed on Tuesdays, like I said. The National Memorial is open, every day but Tuesday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. And the tickets for the museum for adults is $8. The memorial is $5. So it's $10 if you want to do both. And I really strongly recommend that you do both to get the total experience. And then for students and seniors, the museum is $5. The memorial is $5, and the total for the both is $7. And then children under 6 is free. So I thought that was neat. I know someone had asked me, they were like, how much does it cost? Because it was just such a great great. It was such a great museum and experience. So I'm just going to start at the front. A few little key things. There's a lot going on, so I'm not going to attempt to go by to go through everything. I just want to talk about a few things that I found fascinating. That when you go, you know, you'll be able to kind of. I don't know. I hope you would say I heard it here on this podcast and I checked it out, and you know, it gave me pause to think and reflect. So when you come in, they do. The tours do start at certain times. So if you purchase your ticket and it's right, it's actually looks like a little retail area where they've taken the historic building and, you know, turned it into shops. I like coffee. So there were restaurants and coffee shops and everything. So, you know, if you get there, get your ticket and, you know, you've got some time between the time the tour starts. It's a great place to park and it had no problem parking. So it's right there. You can get something to eat or drink or whatever. So when the time comes, you come in, leave yourself a little time to get through the little security, and then it's self-guided. And when you go over to the first wall, you know, there's a lot of reading. So make sure if you need your glasses, put your reading glasses on, put your comfortable shoes on, because again, you don't want to rush through this. But there was, I'd like to draw your attention or talk about, there was a great interactive map of the United States that was just, you know, it's very nicely done. It's a good sized monitor, and it actually started out with talking about I guess the migration of blacks from the northern states to the southern states, and this was like the map was animated. And, you know, I was really blown away. I mean, almost to the level of feeling, if you can imagine someone just kicking you in the stomach and all your air comes out and you're just gasping for air. It was on that level when I saw this animated map. And what they were, they had the key, the color was red, and then they were just all these dots from Maine all the way down the coast and, you know, Philadelphia, the whole country of the United States, and these little red dots, and it had like a little timer where it was showing you, you know, 1830, 1831, 1832. And it showed where when the rest of the world outlawed the slave trade, America actually, you know, and if you go back and if you just go back and understand the time period, you know, everybody knows the 13 colonies and a lot of America was based on the East Coast. So that was kind of like the outlet to the world. And so when the rest of the world outlawed slavery, you saw all these red dots up and down the East Coast. But as international mood changed, you just saw this huge, huge migration to the South. And the map just did such a good job at moving these dots to the South, along with the year, each year that changed. It was just remarkable the way that was done. That within itself just really set the tone for what was about to follow, what the repercussions of that were, what industries sprung up around that, how rivers were used to transport slaves, how railroads were used. And in that same area of the exhibit, you're told right where you're standing. And this was another eye-opener for me, especially as a man of color. But it should be all Americans. When I was reading on the wall, one of the trends down south right now is to take historical buildings, and you don't tear them all the way down. You just refurbish them with the idea of with the idea of leaving some of the original facades and the beams and different things from that time period as you remodel them and modernize them. And this museum did an excellent job at keeping the continuity of the building while, you know, turning it into a museum. But in that same area, so, you know, I see this map and I'm just blown away. It's an animated map, and it just really shows, you know, the migration and the story of how blacks were forced marched, moved on railroad, shipped down to the South. And in the same area, you read that the place that you're standing, the building that you're in, was actually a warehouse where they were bought in, as same as we would bring in cattle or any other livestock, where they were bought in, and this was a slave warehouse. And it really, I don't know, it just set a tone. It really kind of, you know, took you from, hey, I'm here at a museum walking through, and I'm sure we've all been through a museum. And it really just puts you in a mood to really, like, slow down and start reading. And there's a lot of reading as to what you're about to experience. And deeper still, what people from both sides, the people selling the slaves, the people responsible for, you know, getting the inventory in and ready for auction, you see a clear look from the fly on the wall to what this must have been like. And that kind of sets the tone to bring you into the next stage of the tour. So I'll get into that after this break, and stay tuned. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. So I just want to continue from our last segment as I kind of take you through some of the notable things that I noticed at the Legacy Museum from enslavement to mass incarceration. Yeah, I think I did a pretty good job at telling you what kind of caught my eye in the first stop, if you will, during the self-guided tour. The next, after you leave that part of the exhibit, you go, it's a little darker. You go around this corner, and the light is very low, and you actually see slave pens. And in these slave pens, this is where, just to kind of set the stage or set the mood, this is where, imagine if you will, you're getting ready to be auctioned off, you know, in the next day or two, or maybe even that day. You are, you know, how would you feel, you know, I mean, you know, where, let's just say you just got off of a train, or you're from a rural area, or you are already a slave, and you know, somebody has to satisfy a debt. And I'm an old car guy, so the process is exactly like what happens in the used car market. It's a huge market. You know, we take in trades. There's auctions. There's trade-ins. It was identically the same setup. So just imagine, if you will, you're in a slave pen. You know, there are people coming in. A lot of times what you'll find is, you know, people will come in, and before, I know it happened in the car business, before a car goes to the auction for people to bid on it, there's a lot of different things that have to happen. From you know, the bill of sale, you have to, in the car business, you have to check and make sure you know, the brakes work, or a certain amount of you, which you're selling, you're standing behind your product. So the same thing went on in preparing slaves for auction or trading, if you will, when they come in. So the same things went into that as well. But what was very remarkable, and I'm really not ashamed to say this, because, you know, full disclosure, I'm an empath. I really feel vibrations and emotions of things. So when I was in that area, again, it was dimly lit. They had recreated probably about 6 slave pens. And they were, you, when you came and stood in front of them, you had the perspective of someone who either worked at the facility or someone who might have, who might be looking to purchase you at the auction. And they were holograms. So each holding cell, I like to call them pens because it's really, it was more akin to livestock. So each pen, as you walk in front of it, there's just a realistic Star Trek Next Generation holograms that engage you in conversation. And it's, the conversation is one way, but you actually have the feeling of a two-way interaction. And I don't want to spoil it, but, you know, there was one, one in particular got to me because, actually all of them got to me for different reasons, but one in particular, there were some kids that, were separated, from their mother. And, you know, a lot of times just kind of going from the perspective, when people, and all of us do it, you know, we tend to say, slavery and we go by it at warp speed and just, we say slavery and that's, I think this really helped, slow that narrative down to really, illustrate, the actual, what it feels like. I mean, when we say slavery, well, what is that? I mean, what was the human impact? I mean, what was it from another perspective, not just the one that we are taught, and to see the kids, and even the parents and just really, they're really engaging you, begging, you know, asking, you know, have you seen my child? Have you seen my mother? And the anguish of families being separated. You know, after about, I don't know, I got to, you know, I looked through a few when I got to one, I had to just really go off in the corner, I cried and had to, you know, compose myself. But again, it just to be able to look at these people, not livestock, these people, to look at them, to the hologram was just, again, state of the art, really just did a good, an excellent job of really putting the experience into a context that it really helped me see, and you know, it should help other people see the impact of what it was like to be on the other side. You know, what would the slave be saying prior to the auction? What that feeling is, again, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, it was probably about a 50. The actors that were actually used to create the holograms really got into character, really, gave a perspective, that I have not seen, as it relates to slavery, in America. So that was that section. So, when I get back, I'll tell you about, the next little leg of the, it goes into like a open area with a lot of different things to take in. When we get back in our next segment, I'll talk a little bit about that and a few interesting facts. Stay tuned. Thank you. Welcome back, everybody. So we're back, and I kind of wanted to talk a little bit before I got into some noteworthy things as in the next part of the exhibit. One of the things that I noticed that kind of, you know, it was so much positive things going on, so much reflection going on. And I'm sure you can tell by now with a museum of this magnitude, you're going to get a lot of tour buses that bring kids in and people who are coming in groups that really want kids and just adults alike to really get an understanding of their history. So they're coming by the busload. I just want to talk a little bit about the etiquette of such a place. And, you know, I don't want to, it's my goal to not really talk about it from a black or white perspective, because we're all Americans, and I personally feel all Americans need to see this. But I'm also not going to shy away from the fact of what I saw. If I was writing a book report, I really feel that I saw a lot of black children that were actually going through this museum and not showing the reverence and respect that is due. And that was one of the things at this exhibit, and me being a man of color, that really, it hurt, and then it hurt. It hurt because I'm already just coming. I felt like a veil had been lifted off of my eyes as to what my ancestors had gone through in American history. We just left the slave pen and just really heard, the pleas and cries and from their perspective. And then, you know, when you come into the next segment, it's open and it's a lot to take in. So it's almost like you go from 18 something to 2018 just by just leaving one room to the other. And just to see the kids that were, they were going through, they were looking at the exhibits, dancing, running, talking during some of the videos. There are some videos where you can kind of go in and sit down and take it in. And, you know, I don't want to be the dead horse, but I also feel that out of respect, parents or adults or chaperones, I mean, that is something you have got to you've got to stress, you've got to teach the children, because in today's climate, I'm sure everybody knows nobody lives under a rock. In today's climate, you know, we hear a lot about, let's tear down this statue, or, you know, we're sick of this Confederate this or that and the other. But in a broader sense, I can't get mad at someone regardless. I can't get mad at somebody who's paying homage to their history. Having said that, I don't think that somebody in Germany should throw up a monument to the Nazi regime for their crimes against humanity and claim that is part of Jewish culture. So don't get me wrong. I'm not advocating. I agree with Confederate things. What I do agree with is the fact that people are passing down what they believe to be some kind of knowledge and respect or reverence for those who came before them. And I did not see that. I'm not going to say everybody, but it's, again, you know, it meant enough to me to kind of take some time in this podcast to like really put that out there. And for those who have not visited, I want to plant that seed that, you know, this is like the Jefferson Memorial or any other memorial, it needs to be treated with dignity and respect as you take in these things, because it's not about you, it's about you, and then it's about the people around you, and then last but not least, it's about the people who may have live their life as animals, as property, and been consumed and then thrown away like we would do a paper towel that's, you know, that's no longer ready to be used. So just to circle that up, really would like people to understand that we, and these are my people, or anybody, you really do a disservice when you don't respect your own history, and then by the same token, get on a soapbox and ask other people to respect your history when you don't. And parents, that's a direct challenge to you, because, you know, history, while, you know, doing it in school and learning in school is one thing, but certain kinds of history have to be the reverence has to be learned at the dinner table. So, you know, that's I just wanted to put that on record. So when we get back, I'll tell you more about my experience as I went through the museum, the Legacy Museum. Stay tuned. Okay, welcome back to the podcast, and I'm still talking about the Legacy Museum, which is from enslavement to mass incarceration. And so now I know I finished off the last segment, and I hope I didn't scare anybody off, because I committed to not getting on a soapbox. But again, you know, it was such a positive experience that I felt that just had to be put out there. So moving right along, this museum is basically a narrative museum. And it's really it was really well done. You could clearly see that a lot of scholars worked at this with help from academia, as well as taking the time to actually reach out to families and research records and county records and bill of sales and different things to really get a irrefutable look at just the era, like what really went on. And one of the things that I've noticed, again, not being born in the South, but I'm a converted Southerner now, oftentimes we hear when the debate comes up about the Confederacy or the rebel flag, we often hear people who defend the Confederacy say things like, "I didn't own slaves," or "get over it," or you know, it's pride and heritage as justifications for kind of spiking the ball in people's faces and basically saying that, you know, our story, our ancestors are worthy of being remembered, while other ancestors are worthy of being marginalized, skipped over, or just not giving the due respect that's due to the dead, to the humiliated. That's part of the American story. And I think all of us do a huge disservice, and we send the wrong message when we approach history in that way. So the narrative, and I'll just kind of touch on a few things there. On one wall, when you come in, I mean, you really sit down and see you really see what happened between the Emancipation Proclamation and the Reconstruction era. And then the what is dubbed the Great Compromise, and you just kind of see how physical chains were removed, and then we see the Civil War came to an end, and there was some protection under the federal government, and then you just kind of see, and you get a chance to read just the sheer numbers of people who were kidnapped, terrorized, lynched, or made examples out of. You really get a chance to just see how it went from a physical bondage with chains to a physical bondage with legal systems and heritage or Southern traditions were imposed to put people right back in slavery. So you have a wall there that kind of lets you go through at your own pace and just kind of see how we went from Civil War to Reconstruction to the Great Compromise to Jim Crow to segregation. And it was almost like just looking at a ball being handed from one to the next, to the next, to the next. And the result was the same. You know, people were marginalized. They were living in fear, terror, and humiliation. So you really get a chance to just see this on a larger than life scale. It's a whole wall. It's putting up numbers with some really good images. Looks like a huge coffee table book where you can just really just kind of take in at your own pace, like this is how it unfolded. So your heritage that some people are happy about, you can be happy about it if you omit this side of it. You could be happy about it, but if you put that side in there from the black perspective or the people who were subjected to your heritage, I just think it paints a whole different narrative. And I would like to think, because I'm an eternal optimist, if we get that story, we as Americans get that story to the forefront. And when I say the forefront, I mean the forefront of the era. So if we are celebrating Stone Mountain and the Confederacy and the Confederate States of America and the daughters and the sons of the Confederacy, that's your right if that's what you want to do. But if we're going to celebrate that, we can't celebrate that with the joyous time, because just far too many people died, suffered under that flag, under that heritage, under that system of government, that we do a disservice to history. So that wall is something that was just it just painted a clear picture just by imagery and just sheer independently verified facts. Another part that caught me was the actual slave catalogs, the bill of sales, actual bill of sales, actual slave catalogs of auction data. How a slave could get punished, or how they could get punished by not taking an active role in their sale. So what does that mean? That means there were beatings, okay? There were beatings, but they couldn't beat them and leave lacerations. So it was more like a flogging, an instrument that they used that they could be beaten, but it wouldn't damage their skin, because, again, you don't throw mud on your car before you run it through the auction because you want to sell it and you want to keep the value up. That was just seeing there's a whole wall of actual photocopied and just these are actual official records of descriptions of sales, the descriptions of slaves, and where they come from, this is how many slaves we're going to be running through the auction today. To actually just see that and look at it and just realize that it was almost like they weren't even talking about human beings. It was similar. Again, I'm a car guy. I was in that industry for 12 years. To just kind of see that comparison was, again, an eye-opener, because, when it's taught, it's either, whenever the subject comes up down south, it's I'm going to hit you over the head with my history, and I'm going to make you feel guilty for my history, and we never just really think about the matter-of-factness of it. Another thing in line with that, just seeing the bill of sales and just hearing what the process was selling them, there was a map Matter of fact, you know, I'm going to stop right there, and I'm going to pick this up. I'm going to pick this up in the next segment. I just want to talk a little bit about the sheer wealth and industries that were created and thrived under slavery. Stay tuned. Welcome back, everybody. So continuing with our journey through the Legacy Museum from enslavement to mass incarceration, there was another part of the exhibit that is something to behold. They have some jars, and the project basically allowed people who knew about a lynching event. And it could be independently verified, and again, you could tell that this wasn't no. I heard somebody got lynched. This was well documented and could be independently verified. But they have a wall of jars, and they're probably about 3 gallon jars. To just paint the picture, there's dirt in them. And it has the name of the person who was lynched, beaten, killed. And they take actual dirt from that site and they put it in a jar. They put their name on it and then they send it in. And they're nicely displayed. And it just to actually see the dirt where someone has lost their life by being terrorized or just as a way to inflict mental anguish on a community to support the Southern heritage or way of life was really well done. And that exhibit was just that's something that's on my mind. I thought was well done, and it was well done as a tribute to those who died and may have been forgotten by the mainstream. So also in that same area, there is a huge table, and it's round in nature, and you touch your screen there, and it kind of takes you through two things that stuck with me. You click it, and it's actually stories of families. One in particular, and I'll just tell you the short story of it. It kind of piggybacks off of the economics when people say, you know, they didn't own slaves, or people should just get up and work, and they'll, you know, they'll make the American dream. But there was a family. I think it was in South Carolina, but anyway, the lady's great grandfather was a businessman who did well. He owned 476 acres. He had cotton. He was, by all accounts, he was very successful in this southern town. Now, 467 acres, even by today's standard, that's a lot of acreage. And especially if you can develop it and you've got the business wherewithal to really farm it and make it yield. That is how generational wealth is created, and that's how a lot of people today, their ancestors was able to create, and they were able to pass down land and different things to their descendants that, if managed properly, could really last up until this day. But here nor there, the story shared is told by the great granddaughter's perspective that the grandfather went to market to sell cotton seeds, and the owner of the store clearly gave him what we call in the car business a left-hand turn down. He offered him a price for the cotton seeds that were well below market value. And the story has it that the man said, "Give me my damn cotton seeds back." Simply by saying, "Give me my damn cotton seeds back," this man was lynched. Went to his house, violently lynched this man, and then told his family, "You've got until sundown to get out of the county." Okay, so they're running for their lives. The grandfather, the great grandfather, is lynched. They took all of his land. That's 467 acres, all of his assets. When the family appealed to the mayor and the governor, they were told there's nothing they can do. So the government actually said that there was nothing they could do. So a family's wealth, fortune, generational wealth was teetotally wiped out. Totally wiped out because one person did not like being told, give me my damn seeds back. And this was, again, the account was well chronicled. So, you know, to what does that do to subsequent generations? What kind of property could not be passed down to his descendants? What kind of the land now, it's gone. It doesn't, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, I'll say this. This is not an isolated incident. This was par for the course. And when we just say, you know, hey, you're lazy, or hey, you should just work and you'll get it. Without looking at the historical context of it, we can we could be putting gasoline on a fire that we may not mean to when it comes to this debate between, you know, the Confederacy and what's so great about what they've done and their heritage, when we just don't know. So that story was one that was shared, and it's a big round table that has several family stories, but that one stuck with me. So when you go there, you definitely want to check that out. And then at that same, it's a huge round table, and it has four screens, so you can kind of go on to the next exhibit, but you're at the same table. And the other thing, there is a map of the United States, and again, the color is red. So they have like a key from like light red, medium red, dark red, and it's telling you the key on the map is like numbers of people by the red. And again, it's a map of the United States, and every single county where every single county is represented in the United States. Now, you can, it's a touchscreen, so you, if you touch on it, it can actually break out a state, and then within that state, it'll show every county in that state, and then they'll have like the same key for the color red. So what I found that was fascinating by the color key, this is just showing you how many lynchings were, you know, in a region, in a state, and then within a state, the county. I was really, really fascinated because I live in a suburb of Atlanta, which is Paulding County. Imagine seeing this map, tons of red, you know, a lot of lynchings and terror went on. Paulding County was the only county in the state of Georgia that did not have one reported lynching, which was just, it stuck out because when you look at the map, the first thing you want to do is look at your county. And then being in the metro Atlanta area, quite naturally, you know, I looked at Fulton, I looked at Clayton, I looked at Cobb, I looked at Gwinnett, you know, so I want to look in the, and then places that I had lived. I have lived in Memphis. My parents retired there. I got family there. Memphis was, they had a lot of lynchings there, which is Shelby County, Tennessee, DeSoto County, Mississippi. So it was just, that was fascinating that one county had none reported. So I was just like, wow, that's, huh, see, gotta know. So that part of the exhibit was something that I felt was noteworthy as well. They had the part about the mass incarceration of today. It was very nicely done. I did kind of brush through that rather fast because There is a lot of good information, good documentaries on YouTube and different things that really address the issues of mass incarceration. That, you know, I was so intrigued or caught up in the history that, you know, it is there. It's worth looking at. I skimmed over it, but I'm just sharing the parts that really got me. So those were a few of the highlights that I would like to share about the museum. And to kind of close up on this before I go on to the actual memorial, the peace memorial, you know, I think that, again, the kudos to just the work that the Equal Justice Initiative did to really put this together in a non-biased, almost needle in the haystack, meticulous research done to really give this topic the reverence that it deserves. It's just really in itself worth applauding. So again, I really strongly recommend that you check it out, the Legacy Museum, From Enslavement to Mass Incarceration. And in our next segment, I'm going to talk about my experience at the National Memorial for Peace and Justice. Stay tuned. So the National Peace Room Memorial is 0.7 miles away from the museum, and it is actually a monument that's outdoors that's really noteworthy because of how it was done, and it's really noteworthy for the emotions it evokes, as well as what it says. Just by saying nothing and the way it is arranged. So to kind of set the stage, when you go in, again, there is you have to go through a metal detector and everything. But when you first enter, you see, you can't help but see up on the hill these steel containers about 6 feet tall, and they're just hanging from the ceiling. But as you walk in, there is a statue or sculpture, if you will, so probably about six slaves. And the sculpture takes you to, if you can imagine, in roots where the slaves have been kidnapped in Africa. They're chained together, chains around their necks and hands, and they're being forcibly put on slave ships or right before the cargo hold. So it was, I've got some great pictures of it, but that sculpture itself was, it kind of captures the journey of just the beginning on how the kidnapped Africans actually came to American soil. And as you walk up and then you enter and you see these metal containers, and they're on the floor. Again, they're 6 feet tall. They're made of steel, and they have the county. It's engraved in, and then the name or names of people who were lynched and killed in those counties under those conditions of, again, lynching and being terrorized. And they are actually on the floor. Now, there is a like a pipe that comes out the top to make sure that it's anchored to the ceiling. And you see the names, and you see these containers, and you know you're level with them because they're actually on the ground. And you walk, you keep walking, and you look at the names, and you keep walking, and then you notice when you get about 5 feet away from the first containers, you're taking everything in, then you notice the floor slopes a little bit. And you still don't notice, but you're looking at the names in the counties, and you're understanding, like, wow, you know, the names of these people, they were lynched or killed, and you're still taking it in. But as you keep walking, you notice the floor slants even more down, and the containers are now off the ground ever so slightly. And as you keep walking, the floor slopes down lower, and the containers are higher and higher. And then, you know, you get to a point where the containers are clearly above your head, and you're still reading the names, but you're ever so more looking up and up. So you keep walking, and then it's the containers, the floor slants down at a deeper angle, and then, you know, the containers are clearly above your head, and now you're looking at the bottom of them, and then the county is etched at the bottom. And then you get to the bottom of that, and it's a corner, and you could look back and see, and then you could look forward and see, and then you, and then it hits you that all of these containers are memorials or monuments to people who have been lynched and killed, and you really get the emotional feeling of standing, looking up at someone as they're up in a tree or hanging off a bridge, lynched. And it was sombering. And as the containers were higher and higher lifted in the air, along the walls, there were little plaques of the names of people and why they were lynched. And some of the reasons were just preposterous. One in particular, I can remember, two men were lynched for drinking out of a white man's well. One man was lynched because a coat ended up missing. And these things go all the way down the wall. And when you get to the corner where the containers are above your head, there's a place where some steps where you can stop and just reflect. And there's a great inscription on the wall kind of saying what this memorial, this peace memorial represents. And we all know that, you know, out of all of these containers that are hanging there, we know that there were many more that did not make it to the newspaper or that could be independently verified. So it's really at that point, you know, when the light goes off and you realize how you just kind of rush past the ones at the beginning that were floor level, you almost want to go back and pay homage to those people, which again kind of made me think how in America, and even as individuals, we think of slavery or Jim Crow, and we kind of rush by it, and you do the same thing at that monument. But then as you go deeper and it comes into light what these metal containers really represent, it just kind of reminds us all to slow down and remember that these are people. So that experience was really well done. But as you go out of the museum, they have the same kind of containers, steel containers. And they're all laid out, they're laid down like dominoes in a domino box. And what I didn't know until I got home and was reading the literature, all the ones that are hanging up are also identical to the ones outside laying down. And what's so neat about that is the memorial says that people, counties, can actually come and claim those and take them to the counties that they come from. And I was blown away because, you know, in today's climate, again, people will tell you to tear down a monument. And I don't advocate tearing down Confederate monuments. What I do advocate is for those who care and want to pay homage to Southern history and heritage, you could actually work with the Equal Justice Initiative to actually get those containers, bring them to the counties that they're from, and create your own monument to really not necessarily tear down a Confederate monument, but just shed the light on what the Confederacy, their ideology, their way of life, and their heritage, what effects it really had on the story that is America. So it's almost like an open challenge or open, it begs people that care, if you really care, it gives you a chance to find closure, which again, I didn't even know until after the fact what those were for, but I just thought, again, it showed a lot of forethought that went into the memorial. So I'm going to wrap the show up here. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to to our podcast. Again, the Equal Justice Initiative, I strongly recommend that you check out their website. The museum and the memorial is well done. And we hope that you enjoyed the podcast. And as always, keep living the bow tie life. See you next time.